We're holding on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. We're holding on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hamadiras ishto shel telach leveis aviyah." If a husband puts his wife under a neder,
Ayin Aleph Amud Beis.
If a man puts his wife under a neder that she's not going to go to her father's house, she's not going to go visit her father. And again, you know, what exactly the mechanism of the neder would be, could be, for example, that she made the neder and he confirmed it, like we learned yesterday that Shmuel says, or we could have that Rav would say that he made the neder, but he made something like, if you do, then you're going to be osir in Hanah of Tashmish with me, or whatever the details. Anyway, Bizmanshu ima be'ir. If the father lives in the same town, so it would be more likely that she'd visit him more often, Chodesh Echad Yekayim. Then if this situation lasts up to a month, then they can still stay married and we'll try to work it out. Shnayim, but if it's already 2 months that it's going on, Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba, then he divorces her and gives her a Ksuba. And again, as we've been talking about throughout the Perek, does that mean that we force him to divorce her? Does that mean that we just try to put social pressure on him to divorce her? Whatever the case, it's his fault, again, like in the previous Mishnayos, and therefore he's going to have to pay her Ksuba. If the father lives in another town, so anyway, she's not going to be visiting him as often. Regal echad yekayim. Then, if this lasts for one yomtiv, then that's still fine, and they can still stay married. Shloisha yotzev yitn ksuba. Once it's already three regalim that this is going on, then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Now we have one versus three. The Gemara is going to ask, what about if it's two yomtivim? Next, another case. If he puts his wife under a neder that she should not go to a house of an oval, to be Menachem oval, or to a wedding. So we're not necessarily talking about one particular Beis HaOvel or one particular Beis HaMishteh. We're talking about that he puts her like under a general neder that she's not going to go to such places. So again, we have the same machlokas as Rav and Shmuel before. Does it mean that she made the neder and he confirmed it, or does it mean that she... Yeah, Hamadir can be either one. It can be that she made the neder and he confirmed it, which is what Shmuel said, or it could be that she actually, he actually made the neder and made it that if she does this, then she's going to be also in Hanah of Tashmish with him or something. Yeah. So if he does that, he makes her that she can't go to a Beis HaOvel or a Beis HaMishteh, Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba, then again, he has to divorce her and give her a Ksuba, because like he's locking the door in front of her, as we'll see in the Gemara, the details. But I mean, the basic idea is, as the Rambam phrases it, you know, she's not in jail, that he can force her to stay home all the time. But we'll see in the Gemara what's so bad if she can't go to a Beis HaMishteh or a Beis HaEvel. We'll see in the Gemara why more than anything else that's considered Noyel for now. But if he says in a particular case that the reason is I don't want you to go to this particular Beis HaOvel or this particular Beis HaMishteh because of Dover Acher, because there are people over there, because there are unsneistic people over there, Rashoi, then he has the ability to say that. We'll see in the Gemara, you need to have some kind of evidence for it. You can't just say out of the blue, this place has Prutzim in it, and therefore you can't go. There needs to be some kind of reasonable evidence of it. Another case, Omar law, what if the husband tells his wife that I want you to do such and such, I want you to tell Ploini, some other third party, what you told me and what kind of things we're talking about, we're going to see in the Gemara, but it's things that she would be very embarrassed to tell over to a stranger. Or if he tells her that I'm demanding that you fill up and empty out into the garbage, which again we'll see in the Gemara two possibilities what that means. So in all those cases, he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba, because all of those, in other words, are valid grounds for divorce, as we'll see in the Gemara as we go through what's so objectionable about saying to somebody else these things, or mimalo ma'aral ashba. We'll see in the Gemara the definition of those.
She's the one that might have
So in all these cases, it might be that she initiated the neder, but nevertheless, as we learned before, we talked about yesterday, the idea of hu nosen etzva ben shineha, that we said some of the Tanoim hold, that it's still, we consider it his fault, because he should realize as soon as she makes such a neder, that's no good. Let him, Let him cancel it. Let him veto it as the Torah gives him the right to do. And if he doesn't, then it is his fault. So the Gemara says, how gufa kasha. Now, you seem to have a contradiction within the Mishnah about, so that, again, let's focus back on the first part where he doesn't want her to go to her father's house. So we said, if the father lives out of town, then we said for one regal, it's fine, but three regalim already yotzev yitin ksuva. So what happens to two? Amrit regal achad yakayim. You're saying that if it's for one yomtiv, then they can stay married. Hoshnayim yotzev yitin ksuva, implying that if it's already the second yomtiv and he's not allowing her to go, then the neder is still in effect. He hasn't been matu neder or whatever. Then yotzev yitin ksuva, ema sefer. But the Mishnah continues, shloshev yotzev yitin ksuva. That if it's three, then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuva. Hoshnayim yakayim, implying that if it was only two yom tovim, then they can stay married. So Amar Abaya, sefer ason lekehenes for Rabbi Yehuda. Abaya says, the answer is, the Mishnah is talking about two different cases. As we've learned in the previous Mishnah, we have a difference between Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's a difference between a wife of a Yisrael and a wife of a Kohen. Given that a Kohen, once he divorces his wife, can never remarry her, then the Chachamim want to allow the thing to go on for a little longer in hopes that we can persuade him to change his mind and be matir neder. So therefore, when it says one regal, then that would be whereby an Eishes Yisrael. So then already, once it's two regalim, if he doesn't want to give in, let him divorce her. If later on he realizes, you know what, that was really stupid of me to divorce my wife over something like that, good, then he can remarry her. Whereas the sefer, when it says three regalim, it's talking about a koyin where we want to give him a bigger window of opportunity because if he divorces her, he's not going to marry her. Rabbi Yehuda, so therefore that part of the Mishnah would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. On the other hand, Rabba Ba'ula Amaloi Kasha. And in fact, so you have to ask, what about the first part of the Mishnah where it says Chodesh Echad Yekayim Shnayim Yotzev Yitin Ksuva? It's possible you could maybe understand, Abaya may be understanding that the Shloish of Yotzev Yitin Ksuva is actually referring to both parts, both when the father is in town. So the Tanakhama is saying 1 month versus 2 months, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying there can also be a case when it's 3 months, and when the father lives out of town, where there it's one regal. As the Tanakhama says, and Rabbi Yehuda says, by the way, by a Bas Koyin, it would be by Bas Koyin, wife of a Koyin rather, then it would be three regalim. Anyway, that's a point out by you. Rabba Ba'ula Oma, like Kasha, there's another way of saying, there's no contradiction. We can say the Braisa goes according to the Chachamim as well in the previous Mishnah, where they didn't draw a distinction between a wife of a Yisrael and wife of a Koyin, because kan beredufa, kan b'she'enu redufa. It depends whether she's regularly visiting her father's house. Redufa literally means she's being pursued. So in other words, we're talking about like a person who's very eager to go someplace, as if like they're so eager, they're so quick to go there, as if like they're being chased to go there. So if she's redufa, if she regularly visits her father's house, so then already by the time it comes the second yomtiv and she can't go because of this, then already yotzev yitin ksuva. If she's not so redufa anyway, it's not like every yomtiv she likes to go and spend with her parents, then we can wait up to three regalim. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos gives a different explanation from Rabbeinu Chananel, that as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, a tiny little piece of Agadah over here, you often have that after a woman has gotten married and she's happy and she has a nice shalom bias with her husband, she's very eager right after that, the first yomtiv after that, to go and boast in her parents' house of how well things worked out. In particular, some of them, Mefarshim explain that throughout this Masechta, you have Rashi Madura Kama, which Shita Mukubetzes often quotes. Whether it's from Rashi, whether it's from one of the other Rishonim, anyway, he says in particular, she's very happy that she was found to be a basula. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta about the concept of Tainas Basulim. The husband may not find her a basula for one reason or another and brings her to Beis Din and it upsets their Shalom bias. So when in fact she was found a basula, then she's very eager to go and take pride at her parents' house and tell them that things have worked out beautifully, Baruch Hashem. So now, Satosfus brings from Rabbi Nachmanano, Redufa means that generally speaking, the first Yomtiv, she is Redufa by the time, because it's the first Yomtiv after they got married. The second Yomtiv already, even if she hasn't had a chance to do that yet, she's really not so Redufa. So therefore, the first yomtiv of our Mishnah would be she's very eager to go. When we say shnai, when we say that when the Mishnah is implying that if it's two yomtovim already, they can stay married, that means already we're talking about the second or third yomtiv. So even though she hasn't had a chance to visit the house and boast to them yet, nevertheless, she didn't go the first yomtiv. So already, you know, she's not in such a rush to go. And so now the Gemara continues with something in that vein. So according to not so much a problem. In this case, it's not so much a problem with Rashi, but Tosfos says the advantage of it is that then the next piece, which we're going to quote Rabbi Yochanan, the tiny little piece of Agadah over here, fits better with it, because the Gemara is going to go on to give an example of a woman who does just that, who's very proud of her Shalom Bayis, and she wants to go and boast about it in her parents' house. According to Rashi, there seems to really be no connection between that, just the fact that it used the word Redufa, so now we're also using the word Redufa, whereas according to Tosfos' explanation, according to Rabbi Nachmanano's explanation, there's a much closer connection. So there's a pasuk at the end of Shir HaShirim. You have where Hashem and the based in Shamayla are saying metaphorically about the Jewish people. What are we going to do? What are we going to do about them? Are they in fact loyal to Hashem? Are they not? And Ani Chaim of Ashadai Kamidolus, the Jewish people proudly say, "I'm a wall, and my breasts are like towers," meaning I have Bate Knesias and Bate Midrashes. I have Talmid Chachamim who teach Torah. And the pasuk says, "Oz v'yitzi be'enov kimoitz eis shalom." So then the pasuk says, then I was in his eyes, in Hashem's eyes, like a woman who finds peace. So what's this expression? Means like a kala who's found in her father-in-law's house to be complete. Usually people after they got married would live close to, not maybe in their father-in-law's house, but close to it. So therefore, so she's been found complete over there. Her husband is getting along with her beautifully. And so she's very eager to go and tell over her shvach, to tell over her praise in her father's house. So that's what it means, kamotz eis shalom. So that's an example of this Redufa, which she's very eager to go to her father's house. So now we're saying if she's Redufa, then how can the husband be preventing her from going there and being able to do that? Marsha, by the way, points out in the metaphor of Shir HaShirim, since we're saying that we're Ani Chaim of Ashadai Kamigdolos, that the Jewish people are boasting over the fact we have shuls, we have Bate Medrash, we're loyal to Hashem, and then therefore in keeping with that, Kemoitzeis, the word Moitzeis actually has a double meaning. It means to find. It also means to go out, the Lashon Yotza. So it means we go out between, we go back and forth between Beis Aviyah and Beis Chamiyah, between the shuls and the Bate Medrash, and we express and we give out and tell about how devoted we are to Hashem. And in this vein, the Gemara brings another pasuk. The pasuk says in Hosea, it's at the end of the Haftorah, Parshas Devarim, V'hoya bayemahu ne'um Hashem. It'll be on that day after Hashem and the Jewish people have reconciled after all the years of Golos. Tikri ishi, Hashem says, you will call me ishi, my husband. V'le tikri li oy bali, you won't call me bali anymore. Now, on one level, the pasuk goes on to say, the next pasuk says, because Baal was also used as a name of Avodah Zarah, and therefore we're going to stop using that title for Hashem, and we're going to call him ishi. But the Gemara sees another layer of meaning in it. Ishi is Maloshin Ishus v'nisuin, as opposed to Baili can mean when they're only Arusa. So Amar Rav Yechon, Kekala b'beis Chamiya, means at that point, our relationship with Hashem will be like a Kala in her father-in-law's house, meaning she's already fully married to her chosin and they're living happily together, but like a Kala b'beis Aviya, rather than the earlier stage of Erosin, where they're connected one to another, but they're still living apart because she's still living at home before the wedding has taken place. So therefore we're saying, now, right now, we're only in a stage of Erosin with Hashem. Eventually, we're going to be in a stage of Nisuin with Hashem. And therefore, that is described in the metaphorically in the pasuk over there, that now we're going to use a new way of relating to Hashem as Ishi, as my full husband, that we've actually consummated the marriage and we're living together. Marshall also adds in this connection a very interesting point. We say... we say in davening, we say every morning in davening in the paragraph after the Akedah, Rabbanu Shalom, Moshe Kavash Avraham Avinu, we quote there a pasuk from Yeshaya that says, Vayinatlem Vayinasem Kol Yemei Olam. So literally the simple meaning of it is Hashem carries and bears us and bears our burdens throughout all the years of the world. But he says, Vayinasem is also Meloshon Nisurin. So we're expressing in that pasuk over there that there's going to come a time, right now, we're only in a stage of Erusin with Hashem, but we're going to reach the time of Nisurin when Hashem actually marries us and we're fully living together with Hashem, like a husband and wife and living in Shalom Bayis together, Kol Yemei Olam for the rest of the world's existence. So in other words, that primarily after Mashiach comes, right? To a certain extent, we say that Matan Torah was the Nisurin, but we say that then it's like, unfortunately, there was a breakdown in the marriage, and now we're separated. The Gemara elsewhere describes it like with the word like in at the beginning of Eicha, Hoisa Ke'almana, Ke'isha Shaholach Ba'ilu Minesayam. So right now, we're almost like back in a state of Erusin, and eventually there's going to come where that connection is reestablished as Nisurin stronger than it was before. That's the Torah Chadasha. That's the fact that we'll have the Beis Hamikdash, which is, so to speak, the marital home where we live with Hashem. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Hamadris Ishtar Chola. We say that when a man puts his wife under a neder, cannot go to a Beis HaOvel or a Beis HaMishkan. So we said, Yotzi V'yitin Ksuvah, because like he's locking the door in her face. So the Gemara says, "B'shlemi le'beis hamishta, he can know before now." I can understand. He's telling her she shouldn't go to a wedding. So she's missing out. So she's missing out on the simcha. But if he's preventing her from going to a shiva house, so what's the noyel b'faneha? Why is it so bad for her that it should be considered noyel b'faneha? And the reason is, Tana, we learn in a b'raisa, l'mocha himesa, tomorrow, meaning not literally tomorrow, but sometime in the future, eventually she's going to die, and if she hasn't gone to join in people's avelos, ve'en ko bria soifda, nobody's going to want to make a hesped for her. Ve'ikadamni en ko bria soifna. Another version of that statement is not soifda, as in to cry and make a hesped for her, but soifna, which means to bury her. Nobody's going to be bothered to be involved in her funeral if she never went to anybody else's. So therefore, so that's notable for now. So Tanya, we learn in a b'raisa, hoyer a meyer, remember? My dichtiv tov alachas elbeis ovel milech elbeis evo milechas elbeis mishta. A pasuk in Kehelas says it's better to go to the house of avelos than to go to the house of partying, to a wedding. Ba'asher hu soif kol adam, because the avelos is the end of every person. Everybody eventually dies. Ba'achai yitin el libo, and the living will take it to heart. We all are familiar with that phrase from the pasuk that I've used it any number of times in the years after Chavez Shvat, after the Debitzin passed away. But anyway, so specifically, what is Shlomo expressing with this words vachayitin alibay, means that when a person is alive, he should take into account the fact that eventually he's going to die. Dvorim shomisa, a person should keep in mind things that are relevant for after he himself dies. Therefore, he should realize, disuffered, if he cried for other people, yispidune, people will eventually cry for him. Dekavar, if he helped bury other people, yikbrune, then other people will help bury him. De yodal, where he lifted up his voice in crying, yidlune, people will do the same thing for him. De Levi, when he joined in the Leviah, Yalvone, people will join in his Leviah. De Tan, and when he lifted the mess on his shoulders to help carry him, Yitanune, people will do the same thing for him. So therefore, the point being, in other words, that now this wife, the husband, is preventing her from going to a Beis HaEvel. So therefore, so it makes that eventually, when it's her time to go, that nobody's going to be interested in doing the same thing for her, because they're going to figure she's standoffish, she's not sociable or whatever. And therefore, therefore, that's Yotzi V'yitin Ksuvah. That's Noel Delos for now.
When people go to lie or children.
And what's the difference?
Give me one second because Ellie was saying something. Yeah. Right, of course the relatives go, but we're talking about even the non-relatives. You expect that friends and people who knew the person are gonna come to the Leviah. So people see all the time. One second. So if people see all the time that this woman is not going to Levias or not going to Shiva houses or whatever, so eventually they're going to think, you know what? So she's obviously unsociable. Why should we bother going to hers when her time comes? What are we going to say?
Even if she is sociable, what difference is it going to make? They won't remember her after 5 years that she's buried.
What do you mean they won't remember her after 5 years? That unfortunately, sometimes you have things like that in the world, but sometimes you have people will remember. People will remember if they regularly saw her doing chesed for other people, such as being Menachem Lovell, then yes, people will remember her when her time comes.
And even if it's going to make practically whether they remember or not. I don't understand the point that Shlomo is trying to make here.
That's the point that Shlomo is making, that if a person is doing chesed like that for other people, then eventually people will do that chesed for him. So if a person wants that such chesedim should be done for them after 120, then they should be doing such chesed for other people when they have the opportunity to. And that's what we're saying, that if the husband prevents her from doing that, then that's valid grounds for divorce. All right, let's go on. Okay, maybe it's less so now when people move around. I mean, here, you've moved someplace else, so, you know, nobody knows where you are right now. So, unfortunately, that might happen out of sight, out of mind. But we're talking about she's living here in the same town with the same people that she grew up with and that she grew up with since childhood, you know. All right, anyway, you know what? Let's go on. Let's go on. If you want, we can discuss this later.
One second. You can live within a community and still nobody knows what you're doing and where you are.
Unfortunately, that can happen, but to a certain extent, it depends how much you put yourself out there. All right, anyway, let's go on and we can discuss this later.
Comes on, goes on.
Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had said, that if the husband is arguing that there's Dover Acher going on at this Beis HaMishneh or Beis HaEvel, then he has permission to prevent his wife from going. So my Dover Acher, what do we mean by that? We're talking about there are pritzah sticker, there are unsneer sticker people there. So therefore he's concerned that that might have an effect on his wife. Or they might even make a pass at her or whatever.
That's by either one, by the Levaya,
it can happen by the Levaya also. But Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi says that would only apply if we have a chazaka. There are such people there. But if we don't have a chazaka of it, lav kok mine, he doesn't have the ability to just claim on his say-so, there are pruts in there, you can't go. There needs to be some kind of solid evidence of it. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we said that if he tells her that amanas, I insist that you tell somebody else things that you told me. So we said that's a valid grounds for divorce. So v'tema, what's the problem? Let her say whatever it is. So the answer is, we're talking about statements of embarrassment. So meaning that, so one explanation is it means, so like this, when a husband and wife, before they have relations, they're talking among themselves, they're saying various silly things and various endearments to one another. If he's saying that she should go and tell somebody else that, that's a horribly embarrassing thing for her to have to do, and therefore that's grounds for yotzei and ksuva. A different explanation, I think it's also from Rashi Madurakama, says that we could also be talking about if he tells her, I want you to go over to Pliny and curse him out. So you told me, you yelled at me and you said such and such embarrassing things to me. I want you to go and say the same thing to somebody else. That's also, you know, it's one thing between husband and wife. It's another thing for her to go and spread it to somebody else. What about Oshitem and Malo Ma'arala Ashba? He said, or the Mishnah said, if he told her she has to fill up and empty out into the garbage. So it sounds like it means on the face of it, but he's telling her, let's say, fill up a bucket of water and dump it out into the garbage. So the Gemara asks, of a Tevid, let her do it. Why is that grounds for divorce? So the answer is, so two answers. The Gemara says, Omer of Yehudah Mishmul, Shetamalei v'nei fetzis. The Mishnah is using a euphemism. It means that after she's filled up with Zera, after Tashmish, he wants her to empty it out. He wants her to do things. She should run, for example, Rashi says, in order to cause the Zera to leak out so that she doesn't become pregnant. So that's Yotzi V'yit N'Ksuba. She has a right to demand a divorce from him, either because there are two reasons that Mephoshim give. Number one, there's the matter of Hashchosas Zera. We talk here and there in Shas. Men, of course, are not allowed to be Mashchas Zera. It's a serious Avera. There is discussion in a few places in Shas, and Tosfos in particular, whether women are Chayev in that mitzvah as well. So according to the opinion that they're also in it, then that would be a reason why. The other reason, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, even a woman doesn't have a mitzvah, Pru'eru, but practically speaking, she wants children to be able to support her in her old age and to be able to bury her when the time comes. And therefore, so if he's telling her that she has to do some kind of birth control and she doesn't want to, then that's valid grounds for a divorce. So that's one explanation. B'masnisatona, in a braisa, we learn another explanation, means he tells her she can male asona kade mayim or ta'ara la'ashba. It means exactly what it sounds like. He tells her, fill up 10 jars of water and pour them out into the garbage. Well, what's the problem with that? So b'shleim l'shmuel, I understand according to Shmuel that he's telling her to avoid becoming pregnant. Mishum hachi yotzi v'yit n'ksuba. That's a valid reason for her to demand a divorce and her ksuba. But according to the Braisa, he's just telling her to do something. He's just telling her to do a useless job. Fine. But why? Te'ebed. My nafkala mina. What does she care? Te'ebed. Let her do it. Why is that grounds for divorce? Because it makes her look like an idiot. Because she's doing a useless job like that. So people see her doing it and they think that she's gone crazy. So therefore, so in other words, it violates her dignity. So the Gemara says, Omer of Kahana, here's another case that the Mishnah didn't mention. If he puts his wife under a neder that she should not lend out, that she shouldn't borrow from her neighbors, and she shouldn't lend to her neighbors, nofo kvara, sivar, sifter, verechayim, or millstones, vertanur, or an oven. So usually we're talking about these are all portable things. The oven, we're talking about pashtus, we're talking about the oven is portable. Sometimes you have the oven was often fixed to the ground, but it didn't necessarily have to be. So it was a regular thing among neighbors. Sometimes, you know, my oven broke down or whatever, or I need extra because I have simcha and I need to bake extra or whatever. So people would borrow. So people regularly borrow these kinds of dishes and these kinds of household tools one from another. So if he makes a net, if he puts her under a neder that she shouldn't borrow or lend such things, and he also, Tosfos discusses what the exact mechanism of the neder is, because the Braisa is going to continue on where she made such a neder. So here we have to be talking about that he made such a neder. But again, how does he have the ability to make such a neder? He can't say you can't lend out these things. He doesn't have the ability to do that. So, because it's her and it's her, it's her and it's the Kalim. On the face of it, he doesn't have the ability to ask her to do something that has nothing to do with him. So Tosfos said, and if we're talking about that he made, that if you do it, you're going to be also in Tashmish. Well, we learned before that according to Shmuel, in some cases, then we wouldn't say Yotziv Yitn La'alter. We would say we wait the 1 week according to Bais Hillel, or the 2 weeks according to Bais Shammai, and see what happens. So Tosfos says, let's say, for example, he says, if you borrow or you lend any of this kalim, the hana that results from that is going to be also to me. So like we learned yesterday, in ma'achilinus ha'adam dover asuloi, of course, a person can't be forced to eat something which is also to him. The result is the first time she borrows a sieve and uses it to make food, that food is going to be also to him. And then he's going to end up eating it, and he's going to be over on his isk. Well, but ultimately a person has to eat. So therefore, so that's what we're saying. Yotzi v'yitn ksuba, he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Shemasiya shem rabish chenesea, because he causes her to get a bad reputation among her neighbors. Her neighbors are going to think that she's stingy. Tani namihochi, we learn similarly in a braisa. Hamadras ishlesh letishav letashu nofu kvora rechaim betanu yotzi v'yitn ksuba. Then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Mepneshem asiya shem rabish kenyosel, because he causes her to have a bad reputation among her neighbors. V'chein hi shenodra, and the same way if she made such a neder, shletishav letashu nofu kvora rechaim betanu. And by the way, obviously, we don't mean those things. We mean whatever it's usual in a particular place for women to lend out. Now, we don't necessarily mean like things like beds or furniture or whatever. Those are not necessarily things that women lend out one to another anyway, but it all depends on what's typical in a particular location. Anyway, another one, which like Tera Goyim Noim Lavon. If she makes a neder that she's not going to weave nice clothes for his sons, so the mothers in those days would weave clothes for their children. They didn't have stores to buy them in. Or Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah and Shitim HaKavetzes say it could also be slightly different. Let's say she doesn't regularly weave, but the normal thing would be that she'd hire a weaver, that they then hire a weaver to make clothes for the kids. So if she made a neder that she's not going to do that, also Teitzah Shaloi B'Ksuba, then she can be divorced without a Ksuba. Here we say it's her fault. Mipnei Shemasiyate, Shem Rabbi Shechenav, because again, that she's making him look bad to his neighbors, people are going to think that he's stingy. Why is the kid not dressed properly? Why are they not lending out any household tools, etc.?
Isn't that part of her responsibility to sew, to do?
No, so to make, we said, we learned before, her responsibility is to spin thread, not necessarily to weave, unless that's typical women's work in that time. But here you have, but a separate thing, above and beyond the minimums that she has to do, practically speaking. I mean, you know, the kids need clothing, so you got to get it from somewhere. Either she needs to weave it herself, or she needs to hire a weaver for that. So if she makes a neder that she's not going to do that, then she forfeits her ksuba.
The part she does, you can't make a beg from that.
She could, you could, but yeah, once you have the wool, very nice. Somebody still needs to weave it.
Oh, okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Think of it. There are different malachas of Shabbos. For example, Toiva is one malacha, and then you have all the malachas further on that are weaving. Mesa, Chosa, Shnei, Batinir,
and etc. You have to first make the cloth.
Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, the Elu Yotzis Shaloi B'Ksuba, the following types of women can be divorced without a Ksuba. The first one is she's over on Das Moshe, mitzvahs min haTorah, or Das Yehudis, things that are not min haTorah, but things that Jewish women have the minhag to do. We're going to talk about in the Gemara in terms of the halachas of tznius, particularly. The
Chuppah, right?
What?
We said the Chuppah, right?
We in the Chuppah, we said Das Moshe of Yisrael, yeah. In a get also, if a get unfortunately has to be given, then also it ends with Kedas Moshe Yisrael. Oh, you're talking about how to act kodeshously. Yeah, Kedas Moshe Yisrael. Yes, yeah, so actually it's slightly different. So the Rishonim explained the expression Kedas Moshe Yisrael means that this marriage is contingent also on Yisrael, meaning on what the Chachamim decided as a valid marriage. We have here and there in Chas the concept of Ke'inu Rabbon the Kedushin, that the Chacham can undo the Kedushin and make as if it never existed. That's because we say, to begin with, Kedas Moshe Yisrael, and therefore Yisrael, represented by our Chachamim, say that this marriage has to be dissolved for whatever reason, then we can do that. Here we're saying something else. We're talking in terms of the various dinim around the household. There are things that are Daraisa, and then there are which are in Das Moshe would include things that are Daraisa and maybe also Dirabbanan. Das Yehudis would be things that are not actually Daraisa or Dirabbanan, but they're minhagim of Jewish women, which are widely accepted. And for example, we're going to say as far as the dinim of tznius, and if she's over on those, then that's also grounds for divorce. So parts of tznius are Daraisa. We're going to talk about it, and then we'll talk a little bit about it in the Gemara. Okay.
So really, I was going to ask, why didn't it say minhagim? Because it's referring to the minhagim of the women.
It means the minhagim of the Jewish women, right? So we'll see in the Gemara at the bottom of the Amud what we mean by that. Yeah. So the Ezri Das Moshe, what is an example of Das Moshe? Machilatu she'ena ma'usar. For example, if she gives him food to eat which has not been meiser, so it's tevel, it's also for him to eat. It would be misvedesh mayim. And obviously not just Ma'usa, but other examples. I mean, the same thing would be if she feeds him actual treifas. The Mishnah is just giving typical examples of things that would be very easy, relatively speaking, for her to do. But obviously the same thing applies if she goes and buys, you know, meat or something from a store that sells treifa meat or whatever. Obviously the same thing is going to apply. Or if she has relations with him when she's nidra without telling him. Or if she doesn't take chala off her dough, same problem, you're not allowed to eat the dough. Or if she makes nedarim and doesn't fulfill them. Now, we're going to see in the Gemara, all of these things are talking about things that affect the husband. We're going to see how nedarim affect the husband. The point is, Rishonim explain, if we're talking about that she's being over on things that are just between her and Hashem, that's not grounds for divorce. What we're talking about is things that affect the husband, where because she's not doing these things the way that she's supposed to, then therefore that affects the husband. There is an interesting discussion, by the way, in that regard. We're saying that he has the right to divorce her without a ksuba. What if he chooses to stay married to her? Does he still eventually, if he decides at some later date to divorce her, or if he dies, does the ksuba have to be paid? A number of Rishonim say, the Rosh and other Rishonim, the Ritva and other Rishonim say he would have to. What we're saying is he has grounds for divorcing her. And if he wants to, he doesn't have to give her a ksuba. But if he decides to stay married and then live with the situation, then eventually he'll have to pay the ksuba. On the other hand, the Rambam in a tshuva says that no. He says, Shaloya hichoyte nisker. After all, you shouldn't have the person is doing an Avera and ends up benefiting by it. So he says that, in fact, let's say the husband decides to stick it out a while, but if eventually the marriage is over for some other reason, then no, she doesn't get her ksuba. That's how it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch. Although Reb Moshe Feinstein in one of his Trubas points out nowadays that we have Cherem Diyamin Gershon, you can't divorce a wife against her will anyway. Practically speaking, he may have to pay out the ksuba because she may not be willing to accept the get unless he does that. Also, he points out there can be a case where he married her to begin with, knowing that she's not keeping these halachas properly. Then that's not grounds for divorce, because then that's like we're going to have later in the parak, for example, that there are certain mumim where if he discovers she has them, then it's grounds that he yotzi takes a shalat ksuba. But if he knew of these mumim beforehand and was willing to accept it, then no. So it would be the same kind of thing over here. Anyway. Mishnah continues, the Das Yehudis. So what do we mean examples of Das Yehudis? Yotze v'rosha parua, if she goes out with her hair uncovered. Now we're going to see in the Gemara, the concept of covering her hair is actually part of Das Moshe. So we're going to discuss in the Gemara, there's a certain aspect of it which is Das Moshe and a different aspect of it that is Das Yehudis. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Another one, v'tova bashuk, if she spins thread in the marketplace, and we'll see on Amud Beis what's the matter with that. Umadaberes in Kolodam, and she talks with everybody, which is a pretty sticky thing. Again, the Gemara is going to explain exactly what we're talking about. And obviously, we're not just talking about, you know, she's going into the store and saying hello to the cashier. We're talking about more than that. So we'll see. Abashol says also if she curses his parents in his presence, that's also considered a violation of Das Yehudis and his grounds for him to divorce her. So we'll see in the Gemara again a little detail about that. So we're talking about she curses her husband's father in her husband's presence. Yeah, we'll see in the Gemara the exact details of that. Reb Tarfon Omer Afa Kelanis. Reb Tarfon says also a woman who's very loud. The Ezoi Kelanis, what do we mean by very loud? L'chshim Daberes B'seich Besa, when she talks in her house, U'shchenea Shomin Kola, and the neighbors hear her voice. So we'll see in the Gemara, we're not just talking about any kind of talking. Some people naturally have loud voices. We're going to see in the Gemara that we're talking about where we're talking about things having to do with Tashmish.
But over 12 months, they didn't see that she was loud?
So maybe we didn't spend enough time. No, so that's why the Gemara is going to explain primarily that we're talking about things having to do with iske tashmish. We're going to say in the Gemara that, for example, that she and her husband are talking about tashmish, and she's talking loud enough that you can hear her in the next house over. Yeah. So the Gemara starts off. Machilatu she'inim usir. The question is heichidam. We're saying she gives him food that's not meiser, but what's the scenario? Ida yoda, if he knows it hasn't been meiser, nifrish. So fine, let him take meiser himself. Or actually, nifrish can mean one of two things. It can mean let him separate meiser, or Rashi actually translates it, fine, let him not eat it. He's not required to eat what she's serving him. Let him go, let him get food someplace else. That's not valid reason for divorce. Idol yoda, and if he doesn't know that it wasn't meiser, min yoda, then how is he supposed to all of a sudden know that it wasn't meiser, that he should now have grounds for divorce? Now, Tosfos
explains. Can you eat in your house?
So it would happen, it's a one-time thing, let's say. But Tosfos explains, in other words, that the word ma'achilatu implies that he already ate. So what happens? So in other words, if, for example, so Tosfos says, if it was, let's say, so he finds out that it wasn't meiser before he's eaten, then it's not so bad. She could always say, you know what, I was kidding. I was testing you or something. I wasn't actually, before you were going to actually put it into your mouth, I would have told you, wait, it's not meiser yet, let's take care of it. But if he already is eating it, then she doesn't have that excuse anymore.
She's not talking about incidents. She's talking about things that she does all the time.
Okay, but nevertheless, so fine. So for a few weeks, let him eat out. For a few weeks, let him go buy his own food or something. Or, you know, but and that's not a reason right away to say, Yotzi Yitin, that's a Tetz Shalev Ksuba. So the answer is, Loit Tzricha, the case the Mishnah is talking about, De'omra Le Ploini Koyen Tikin Le Sakri. She tells him, so-and-so, who is a Koyen, fixed up the pile of grain for me. It doesn't have to be a koyan. And in fact, the Rav Rishonim, we don't have to give us a koyan over here. But practically speaking, often it would be a koyan who would do it, because while he's at it, he might as well take his mice. So she says, I had so-and-so stop by, and he took out the proper trumas and meisers. And the husband went and asked that koyan, v'ishtakach shikra, and it turned out it was a lie that he had never been there or he had never done it. So now she's obviously blatantly trying to feed him today for food. Tosfos points out also you could have, for example, if it's Edim, that it wasn't Meiser, but that's less common. However, with that said, the Ritva explains you would have to have Edim. You do have to have Edim for parts of this. You may not have to have Edim that the husband went to the Kohen, but you do have to have Edim, for example, that the Kohen was or wasn't there. Rather than just because the Kohen on his say-so says he wasn't there, maybe he wants to get this woman in trouble. So you do need Edim for certain parts of it, but not that the husband goes and asks the Kohen. You don't necessarily need Edim for that part. Okay. Next, Umashamashta Nida. We said that if she has relations with him while she's a Nida, so the same question, Heichidami, what's the scenario? Ida Yodaba, if he knows that she's a Nida, Nifresh, then let him hold back. After all, she's only going to be Nida for a few days. Eventually, she's going to go to the mikveh. So fine, it's a few days. It's not so bad that right away Tetz Shalei B'Tzuba. Idelo Yodan, if he doesn't know, Nismech Ilava. He should be able to rely on her. She tells him when she's Nida or when she's not Nida. He can rely on that 100%. De Omer Abchinen Abakahana Omer Shmuel, Minayim L'Nida Sheseferes La'atma. How do we know that a Nida counts on her own? Nobody has to be supervising her to make sure that her count is correct. The pasuk says she should count for herself 7 days, and the word la means la'atzma, for herself. So we believe, even though nidah is a very serious thing, it's an issur kodesh, the Torah gives her nemonis over it. So then what's the which, by the way, an interesting thing to point out in this connection, Rabbi Avigdor Miller points out in one of his lectures having to do with this week's parasha, Taka, how is that? What's the mechanism? What's the logic behind it? We're talking about an issur kodesh. You're going to believe a woman on it? What happened to Eidos? What happened to all that? So he says, you know, you find in our parasha, you have the 11 brachas of klolos that they announced on how grizim and how evil. And you know, the whole Jewish people are there, and order isha shayasa pesel masecha, and the rest of them. All of those that are listed over there are mitzvahs that are averus rather, that happen in secret. Masi de chorash v'samba saucer, a person puts an avodah zarah in the privacy of his house and bows down to it. All the other things are either in privacy or at least where a person can claim to the public that what he did wasn't wrong. Many of them are cases of arayas, which are done in private, etc. So therefore, once that was done, that embedded into the Jewish people the concept that it's not just in public you can't do averus, in private you can't either. You got the Eibishter watching. Based on that, then, so basasa that the Eibusha looks at, misasa ishba mistarim baniya laran and no Hashem is the expression Hashem says. What do you think? A person can hide out in secret and I won't see him. So this embedded into the Jewish people, this maimed by how grizim and how evil, embedded forever into the Jewish people the concept that it's not just in public we have to do mitzvahs, but in private as well. Based on that, now Hashem can trust the Jewish woman that she's going to keep her count correctly. Most of the time, of course, again, we have an our Mishnah, we're not, but nevertheless, that in general, that we can trust her, and therefore that the Gemara elsewhere in Sanhedrin expresses that with the expression Suga Basheshanim, from Shir Hashirim. The Jewish people are fenced in by a hedge of roses, meaning, in other words, like this, you would think such a serious thing, you need like barbed wire or something to keep people from breaking through it. No, it's enough to have a fence of roses, and we Jewish people are not going to trample those roses. So again, the question is that if he doesn't know that whether she's nidda or not, then he's supposed to be able to rely on her. So why would all of a sudden and now, of course, in all these cases you can have where afterwards she told him it wasn't meiser or I was nidda or whatever, but that's not common. I mean, she knows she's going to forfeit her ksuba because of that and end her marriage, so it's not likely that she's going to do that. So the Gemara
sounds like over here.
What? She may be doing it lahachis, but the point is that she's still not going to necessarily go and tell her husband outright. She would still rather cover her tracks. We assume she would still rather have her ksuba when the time comes. So what it means is, so loit tzricha, d'omer le ployni chocham tiyo li yasadam. So she says, I had a shayla on a stain of blood. I went to ployni the chocham. He declared that it's tahor, so we're still allowed to have relations. But ozel shayla, he went and asked that rav, v'ishtakach shikra, and it turned out that she was lying. And in fact, that the rob had been metamei, or vice versa, you could have, for example, where she was already, he knew already she was nidda before, but then she says, now I had another stain, and I went to the rob to ask if this one is tahor, and he said it's tahor, you can go to the mikveh, and it turns out that the chacham had said no such thing, and therefore that she still has to wait. So that's one possibility. The ibois ema kedir of Yehuda. Another possibility, you could understand it the way Rabbi Yehuda does. The Amr of Yehuda, if a woman has a chazaka among her neighbors that she is nidda. Women in those days used to wear different kinds of clothing when they were nidda. We talked about it briefly earlier in the Masechta. We said that she gets a new outfit every year, and then she uses the worn out pieces even after she has a new one, because she would wear them when she's a nidda. So therefore, so women would often wear different clothes when they're nidda. So now, if her neighbors have seen her in such clothes, that creates a chazaka that she's a nidda. Now, by la loika alam shum nidda, now if the husband has relations with her at that time, he would get malchus because the chazaka is a powerful thing and it allows us to say that she really is a nidda. So therefore, so let's say, for example, so he had relations with her and afterwards the neighbors informed him, you should know that earlier today your wife was wearing her big day nidda. So now, so yeah, she,
the neighbors have known that they have relations.
No, but afterwards, they tell him, did you know that yesterday your wife was wearing big dinners? And he says to himself, but then I had relations with her and she didn't tell me. So that could be what the Mishnah means. Yeah. Okay. So again, v'loy koitza l'chala. Now we said the next one is if she doesn't take chala off her dough. So again, the question is, hey chidomi, what's the scenario? Idi yoda, if the husband knows that chala hasn't been taken, nifresh, then let him hold back from eating that bread. Again, maybe we're not talking if this would go on for years and years, fine, but at least it shouldn't be right away that we right away pull the trigger, like we said in the Mishnah. The idi lo yoda, and again, if he doesn't know that chala hasn't been taken, minoy yoda, how would he possibly know? And the answer is similar to the other answers. Loitzricha, the Amalei Poini Gabel Tikin Liyaseisa. She tells him that Poini, who needs dough for a living, took off the challah from him. Apparently, there used to be a job in those days. Apparently, when people would make up dough, they wouldn't always mix it themselves. They would sometimes hire an expert to knead it for them. Why, I have no idea. But maybe, I mean, it's a lot of work, but I don't know, whatever. The point is, they had such people, and now she's saying, while I had him knead the dough for me, I also had him take off challah. The Ozo Shaila, and he went and asked this gabel, the Ishtakach Shikra, and it turns out it was a lie.
I would say that if you don't give challah, you have to take 5 pounds. 5 pounds with a hand.
5 pounds, yeah, could be. Maybe.
They had machines then.
That's true, they didn't have machines. Kenzan, okay. Fine. Next, v'nederes ve'enim akayemes. We said if she makes an endorium and doesn't fulfill them, so what's the problem with that? Again, like we said before, if it's something only between her and Hashem, then that's not grounds for divorce. Nederes ve'enim akayemes is between her and Hashem, but it's not. We find elsewhere in Shas where because of the avera of making nedarim and not fulfilling them, a person's children, Nachman Lotzlan, might die. Shenemar, as we find in a pasuk, don't cause your mouth to make your flesh sin. Or the word lachti can also be missing, meaning that your own flesh, the person's own flesh, which are his children, might end up being missing, Rahman al-Tzlan, because of what he said with his mouth. And the pasuk continues, and it says, "Lama yitzef elikim al kolecha." Why should Hashem be angry about what you said with your voice? The chibel as masi yadecha, and destroy the work of your hands. So it's focusing on that. The ezohin masi yad of shaladam. What is the real work of a person? What's the real accomplishment that he has in the world? Heviyem a bonim of noisim means his sons and his daughters. So if his wife is making the daughter and not fulfilling them, then it creates a problem. So there for you. Rab Nachman says it's a different pasuk that expresses the same idea. The Navi says to the Jewish people, "Lashov hi kesiyas b'neichem." On the face of it, the pasuk means, "For nothing have I struck your children." In other words, Hashem is saying, "I'm bringing all kinds of punishments on you, so you should realize to do tshuva, and you're not getting the message." But we also understand, "Lashov" means al iske shov, means because of matters of shov, as in a shvuas shov, where a person makes a shvua, which is a useless or false shvua, then the result is, because of that, Hashem is saying, "He kesi es b'neichem, rachmal al-Islam." So therefore, so when she makes the darim and doesn't fulfill them, then it can have pretty serious consequences. So the Gemara says, "Tanya, ho yirab meir oimer." Rab Meir used to say, it's not necessarily they have to get divorced. "Kola yadeh b'ishtei shenederes ve'enim akayemes." If a husband knows that his wife makes nedarim and doesn't fulfill them, so what can he do for the future? Yachzer v'yedirena. Let him go and put her under a neder again. So how does that help anything? Then she's going to violate those nedarim as well. Ella, what Remeir means, yachzer v'yaktitena. Let him go and provoke her get her in a frame of mind where she's likely to make the type of nedarim that she typically makes. Kadesha tider b'fonav. This way she'll do it in his presence. V'yafurla. Now he can cancel the nedarim. So that way, you have a way out of it. Omruloy, but the Chacham told him that Chacham told the mayor that's not a good long term solution. A person can't live with a snake in a basket. A metaphor meaning, in other words, when you have somebody like somebody unpredictable like that, you can't always be on your guard. Any moment, the snake could bite you. The same way. So what's going to happen? You, the mayor, are saying there's a way he can make sure that the nedarim are in his presence, but one time he's going to miss, and then it's going to be the neder is going to be chal, and she's going to be over on it, and we're going to have what we said before. Similarly, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, if a husband knows that his wife is not taking chala, then let him go and take chala after her. And that way, no matter what, challah has been taken. So, okay, so you give extra to the Kohen, big deal. Also, that's like living with a snake in a basket. One time he's going to miss out, and he's going to end up eating dough. He's going to end up eating bread that challah hasn't been taken from, and he's going to chayv misim de shemayim. So the Gemara says, so now the question is, are Rab Meir and Rab Yehuda arguing with one another? Rab Meir is talking about Nedarim, that there's a way around it. Rab Yehuda is saying, as far as Challah, there's a way around it. Are they disagreeing with each other? Or is each one just talking about a different case? So the Gemara says, Manda Masni Lo Aha. the one who says that Rabbi Yehuda, who says that that you have a way of doing it with challah, well, kol shekein ahach, how much more so when it comes to nedarim? Dough, usually people eat bread every day. So every day she's making up a fresh batch of dough, and yet Rabbi Yehuda is saying he can be on his guard, and every day he'll make sure to separate challah after her. So all the more so nedarim, which is a less common thing, than Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Meir that there's a way around it. Let him make sure that the nedarim are made in his presence. But Rameyu, who says by the case of Nedarim, he would say Avol Ha, but when it comes to the case of Challah, he would agree with the Chachamim, Zimn in the Mikri V'Ochel, it could happen that accidentally he eats it without realizing, because that's an everyday thing, that you have bread, and it's much more difficult to be on his guard all the time. Next, we said the Ezer Das Yehudis. We said, what's the definition of Das Yehudis? So we said, for example, Yotze V'Rosha Parua. She goes out with her head uncovered. So the question is, Rosha Parua Daraisa. That's an Isu Daraisa. That's Das Moshe. That's not Das Yehudis. And we know that, Dichtivo Farah as Rosha Isha. By the Sota, the Pasuk says the Koyan should uncover her hair. The Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel and a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel teaches as Horal of Nois Yisrael. This is a warning that by this pasuk. The pasuk is implying a warning to Jewish women, Shalai Yetzi B'Krua Rosh, that shouldn't go out with their head uncovered. Now, how do we learn that from the pasuk exactly? So Rashi gives two explanations. Number one, everything that's done to the Sota, the Mishnah tells us in Sota, is Midah Keneged Midah for what she did or what she's assumed to have done when she was with the boy. So one of them is that she uncovered her head for him. So therefore, now we uncover her head in public. So we see that a Jewish married woman has no business uncovering her hair in front of other men. The other explanation, which Rashi prefers, is since we're saying Ufara, the implication is up till that point, she's standing there in the Azara with her, or in the Shau Nikon or whatever, with her head covered. And now for the first time, the Kohen takes off her tichol or her shetel or whatever it is that she was wearing, implying that until that point, she had it covered. And Rashi prefers that explanation. Worth mentioning, incidentally, in this connection, somebody once asked the Rebbe, so based on that, what about unmarried women? Why shouldn't we? The fact is, we see that mice b'chol yom, that unmarried girls go with their hair uncovered. Based on this, shouldn't it be the same din applies to them? All the other din of tznius apply equally well to married and unmarried women. And the Rebbe answered, given that the pasuk we're learning it from is talking about a married woman, then we have no source to say that it should apply to unmarried women as well. So the answer is, by the way, worth mentioning in that connection, when we say unmarried woman, now we know if a woman has gotten divorced or widowed, then she still has to keep her hair covered. Although I've seen there are poskim, I believe Moshe has a tshuva about this, where maybe if it's necessary for shidduchim, like nobody's going to be interested in shidduchim with her if they realize she's married previously. So maybe there's grounds for her to allow, in certain cases, for her to uncover her hair. Anyway. So the answer is daraisa kalosa shapir damim. The answer is on a daraisa level, it would be enough if she covers her hair with kalosa. So kalosa is a work basket. A woman would keep, for example, we said before, she's spinning thread, so she would keep the thread and the tools in a basket like that, and carry it on her head. The basket was shaped kind of like an hourglass. So it had, there's the opening on the inside, which would store the thread and whatever, and then you'd have an opening on the bottom to make it fit over her head. So midaraisa, that would be enough to cover her hair, because at least her hair is mostly covered. But there are holes in it. You can still see her hair through the holes. In modern terms, it would be like the equivalent of a tichel with a loose weave or something.
Fishnet.
Like a fishnet, right. Maybe not the holes quite as large as fishnet, but yeah. But in Das Yehudis, I feel a kalosa nami also. But based on Das Yehudis, even kalosa is no good. She needs an actual tichel or an actual shetel. So that's what the Mishnah means. If she goes out wearing only kalosa, she hasn't been over on Das Moshe, but she is over on Das Yehudis. So in this connection, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechanan, kalosa ein ba mishum prua rosh. If a woman is wearing a kalosa on her head, then that's not considered prua rosh. So Havi bar Rab Zera. So Rab Zera was wondering about that. Heicha, where are you talking about? Ilema b'shuk, if you're talking about she's walking in the street, and then the public street, in Rosh Hashanah Abim, with only kalosa, we just said Das Yehudis. We just said that would be a violation of Das Yehudis. She's not allowed to do that. The Ela b'chotzer, are you talking about that she's wearing the kalosa in the chotzer? Im Kain, if you're going to say that's no good, lo hi nach the basla of Ram Avinu, she yeshevas tachas baila. You're not going to leave a single daughter of Ram Avinu, a single Jewish woman, who's going to be able to stay married to her husband, because Women regularly go around in their chotzer with only kalosa, or maybe even with nothing at all. The chotzer is basically just the area in front of the house. Nobody's there during the daytime except other women, except other neighbors, and then you generally don't have a problem of tznius over there. So the answer is, Amar Abayi, v'tamei Rav Kahana, mechotzer l'chotzer v'derech mavu. We're talking about where she walks from one chotzer to another through the mavui, as we learned way back in Erevin. You had a typical arrangement in those times was you had a reshus rabin. Off it, you had smaller streets called mavoyas, where the side street is more like an alleyway, like only the neighbors would use it. The rabbim don't go in and out of it, but nevertheless, it is a semi-public area. And then you had surrounding our chatzeres, and surrounding the chatzeres are houses. So now, if she walks from her chatzer across the mavoy into another chatzer wearing only kalosa, then Rav Asi is saying that that's fine. She should be wearing a tichel, but really, or a shetel, but really, she's only required to do that when she's going out to Rosh Hashanah. To just go through the mavui, which is a semi-private area, then that's fine if she's just wearing kalos. Okay. We said in the mission of a tova bashuk, we said that she's spinning in the marketplace. So what's the problem with that? What's so she's sitting in the marketplace and spinning thread. What's the problem? It means that she's showing her arms to people. So we have, in other words, when you're spinning, you have to lift up as you're spinning. It involves lifting up your arms. Now, if she's wearing loose sleeves, then her sleeves are going to ride up above her elbow, and people are going to see her upper arms. And that's not tzniyistic. So that's an example of das yehudis. So this is, by the way, from our Gemara, is where we get a number of the halachas of basic tzniyus, the concept that we say that women's arms have to be covered until the elbow, and the fact that they have to, that married women have to cover their hair comes from our Gemara over here. So that's one answer. The Zroya means some part of the arm. So you actually have, I think there are some poskim who learn that the Zroya is the lower arm, and in that case they say sleeves would have to be until the wrist. As far as I know, the majority of poskim say that Zroya means the upper arm, and therefore just the upper arm can't be uncovered, but the lower arm is fine, which is why you regularly see mice and macholia and the women wear three-quarter sleeves or whatever, and it's fine.
Otherwise,
when they raise their arms, so as long as the sleeve has to be reasonably tight, it can't be skin tight. That's also not sneistic, but it has to be tight enough that when she lifts up her arm, it's not going to. Rav Chista Omer Avimi betoiva verod keneged panel. Rav Chista says in the name of Avimi another explanation. It means where she's spinning verod keneged panel. Now the word, so Rashi explains the word verod means and it flattens out. So Rashi explains like this. Part of the process of spinning thread is you have to roll the thread. You have the fibers, you have to roll them together to make a thread. Sometimes what you would do is you want to rub it on some kind, you want to roll it on some kind of surface. A typical surface available for that purpose is your leg. So therefore, what she might be doing, she's sitting in Rosh Hashanah over there and doing it on her leg in such a way, kineged poneha, in front of her face, meaning poneha shalmata, meaning in the area, the private parts of her body, where like she wants to draw attention to them. The movements over there that she's doing with spinning the thread are meant to draw attention to that part of the body. So again, it's not technically das moshe, but it's certainly pritzistic, and it's a violation of das yehudis. Tosfos gives a different explanation. The word is not, so according to Rashi, the word is virod, which means that it's flattened out. It's lying near poneha. So the word virod, means flat. So therefore it means that she's flattening it out and rolling it out in front of poneha shalmata. Yeah, like a rid, yeah. So, yeah, like, well, Lord Radresh, no, is a different shodash. No, you have, for example, when it says by the Mishkan that they beat out sheets of gold by Yerakuas Pachay Azov, so Targum translates it over there, Vradidu. They flattened out the sheets of gold and then cut out threads. Anyway, Tosfos gives a different explanation from Abinu Hanano. It's not Verod, but rather Vered. Vered means a rose. So it means that she's davka spinning rose-colored, red-colored thread in order that in front of her face, so that the shine of it lands on her face, and that way people are looking at her face and admiring her. So therefore, that's a pritzistic thing to do. The Rambam gives yet another explanation. He says that it also means, he says, Vered means a rose, and Paneha means her face, means she's sitting over there with a rose in her hair, like the way the Goyim sometimes do, in order to attract attention to herself. So again, any of these things, they're not technical violations of tznius, but nevertheless, they are pritzistic things to do. Then we said, "Udaberes im kol adam." We said she speaks with any person. So, "Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel v'masacheches im bachurim" means that she's playing and joking around with young men. So that's Pritzah stick. That's yeah. So the Gemara gives an example. One time I was following Rav Ukva in the street. I saw a certain Arab woman, and we know from elsewhere in Shas and Kedushin, the Arabs particularly are shtufi bezima. They have an unusual proclivity for znus. So this Arab woman, Dava Yosva, she was sitting there. Koshadia Pilcha B'Tava, she's throwing her pelach, her spindle, and spinning. The process of spinning involves that you have a tool called a spindle. So she's doing that. V'Tova V'Rod or Vered Keneged Paneha, and she's doing exactly this Vered Keneged Paneha that we just described. Kiven de Chazitinon, Rabbi Babachana says, when she saw us, when she saw me and Ma'ukva, Pasikte la Pilcha, she broke off her spindle, Shadise, and she threw it, Omrali, and she says to me, Ulam, young man, Havli Pelech, please give me my spindle. So she used it, she pretended like she had dropped her spindle in order to call over Rabbi Babachana to bring it to her, and then she figured she can engage him in conversation and things can develop from there. So Omer bo Ma'ukva Milsa, and Rabbi Bachana says Ma'ukva said something about that. So my Omer bo, what exactly did he say? Omer Ravina, so Ravina Omer Toiva Bashuk Omer bo. Ravina says that Ma'ukva explained to Rabbi Bachana, this is an example of what we said is the problem of Toiva Bashuk, which is doing this Toiva Verod Vered Keneged Paner, which is spinning in such a way to call attraction to parts of her body that a yid shouldn't be paying attention to. Rabban and Amri, the other Chachamim in the Yeshiva said, Midaberes and Kolodim, that Ma'ukva explained, this is an example of the Midaberes and Kolodim, where she's speaking unnecessarily with men. She's pretending like she dropped her spindle and asking the young Rabbi Babachana to go and give it to her in order to engage him in conversation. And that would be an example of what we mean, Midaberes and Kolodim, that when a woman is acting like that, then it's a violation of Das Yehudis. And we said in the Mishnah, Abashol or Ma'afam Kalelas Yoda Bafana, Abashol says also if she curses out the ones who gave birth to him in his presence. So what does that mean? Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Mashmol, Bim Kalelas Yelida Bifnei Melidov. The exact Yusa Agos Agrol changes the words a little bit. Yoda Bifnei Melidov, whatever. The point is, she curses his parents in front of his children. In other words, the Mishnah is talking about where, for example, so she's married, let's say, to Yitzchak, and she's cursing out Avraham in Yitzchak's presence, but Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is adding also if she curses out Avraham in Yaakov's presence, their son. That's also a violation of Das Yehudis, and that's also grounds for divorce without a ksuba. The Simonach, and the way to remember it is like the pasuk says, Ephraim and Manasseh, Keruven v'Shimon, Yuli. Yaakov says about Ephraim and Manasseh, my grandchildren, they should be considered like my children. So therefore, in other words, we see that we're talking about not just insulting the grandfather in front of the son, but also insulting the grandfather in front of the grandchildren would also be what the Mishnah is describing.
A moment ago, you said two generations.
No, so that's what we're saying. In other words, so what we mean is Yaakov to Ephraim and Manasseh is grandfather to grandson. So in other words, if Yosef's wife had been cursing Yaakov in front of Yosef, or if she had been cursing Yaakov in front of Ephraim and Manasseh, then that's what we're talking about. Omar Rabba, but Rabba says slightly differently. Let's say it's not just that she does it in their presence. Actually, Rashi says this is to explain what this is to. He's not arguing because Omar Rabba means that he's not arguing. He's explaining to explain what Rabbi Yehuda says. He means if she says, for example, a curse on the grandfather, she says, let a lion eat up the grandfather, and she says such a thing in the presence of his son. So if Yosef's wife, to take the example the Gemara is using over here, if Yosef's wife had said, I wish a lion would eat up Yaakov, and she says that in front of Ephraim and Manasseh, that would be an example of Makalas Yolda B'fnei Melda. Then we said in the Mishnah of Taufin and Ma'afa Kelanis, Reb Taufin says also a noisy woman, a loud woman. So my Kelanis, Omer of Yehuda Mishmol, but Mashmas Kolal Iske Tashmish. Means she's very loud when it comes to Tashmish. So when he wants her to engage in Tashmish, she argues with him and she argues and yells so loudly that the neighbors hear about it. So it embarrasses him. The Masnisa Tona, in a Braisa, we learn differently. It means that Tashmish is painful for her, and when they do Tashmish in one chotzer, she's so loud we can hear her all the way to the other chotzer. So the Gemara says that can't be. The Nisniya Gabi Mumin Masnissin. Further on in our Perek, we're going to talk about where the woman has Mumim, which are grounds for divorce if the husband didn't know about them ahead of time. This, if it's so painful for her, is also a Mumim, prevents them from doing Tashmish. So the Gemara says, you're right, Elam Chavarchik with the Shanin and Me'ikara. So you're right, we have to answer like we answered originally, that what it means is that she's so loud when it comes to talking or arguing about Tashmish, the neighbors hear, and therefore it embarrasses her husband. But if it's painful for her, that might be grounds, but that's for group divorce, but that's for a different reason, because that's a matter of a mum, which we're going to talk about later in the paragraph. Okay, everyone.